This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate. Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well, Josh. And in honor of, I guess this is effectively us kicking off chip season, the season of the FPL. My wife has just made some guacamole and we broke out a bag of chips. So it's a literal chip day in my household.
Here. Yeah, it's President's Day here in the United States, which I guess, you know, it sounds like a celebration of presidents. It's really just that that Washington and Lincoln have birthdays very close and they didn't want to do two separate holidays. So I don't like people to think that like we're so vain in this country that we just celebrate our presidents. They're not kings, Brandon. Just
sorry, Taft and Garfield, but this is not about you. As much as you would like it to be, it's not.
So we're recording this in the afternoon. The Man United Chelsea game is kicking off in just a few minutes, so we'll be on goal watch for that. But you know, there's really no good time to during this season. There's like no good day to record these podcasts. You know, I mean, tomorrow Liverpool play Bayern Munich, and that's a huge match. You know, Man City play the day after that. So you know, there's really no time where you're like, okay, now is the perfect time to do this. I mean, you know, so we're just
is the curse of all podcasts, right? I mean, how many podcasts do you subscribe to every week where they come back the following week saying, oh, this news broke immediately after we recorded?
I know. And I felt that way even more, like more than usual. I think the last couple of weeks of the podcast where you've had stuff like the Aubameyang illness. And, you know, I felt like there was a lot of times, and I'm sure other people, you know, people felt this way, even like when they were talking on Twitter or whatever. It's like a lot of advice that we had was just rendered completely moot, you know, by some, which isn't normally the case. I mean, if it was always the case, we wouldn't do this podcast, right?
Yes.
Like if you just constantly gave advice that was just immediately invalidated, that would not be fun to do. But just there's been like a couple like kind of freak incidents that have like changed things a little bit the last few game weeks. So
it's a reminder though that context is king. I mean, we always record after the matches happen that weekend, and so much can change during the course of the week, including the Champions League fixtures for Liverpool and Man City that are coming up this week. So we put enough trust and faith in our listeners. You guys and gals are all smart enough to take what happens during the week and put it into the context of what we've said and make your teams the best they can possibly be.
And that is also, Brandon, why we do the kitchen table sessions now for our Patreon supporters. So I'm just going to bump the Patreon plug up to the top here, Brandon.
Great.
If you would like to support the Always Cheating podcast, support the podcast that we do, and you also get some free stuff as a result of that, one of which is you get a bonus podcast each week. That is the kitchen table sessions. We typically record that on Thursday night. heading into the Friday matches. It's kind of a last look at our team, our transfer decisions. It'll be even more crucial this time around because we have Friday kickoffs this game week. Now, granted, the Friday kickoffs are two of the worst matches you can imagine. Cardiff, Watford, West Ham, Fulham. I mean, come on. Those are like, what even are those matches? It's crazy. Why are there two on Friday? Why are they those two matches? It's very,
it's strange. One of those, put them on Friday so we can get this over with, right. Sort of a situation. However, yeah. I mean, we're going to talk a lot about game week 27 in just a brief moment, but West Ham could be a popular pick for teams looking to cover blanks for Manchester City and Chelsea. So West Ham could be a team to watch in game week 27.
That's right. So we're going to talk about that in just a sec. What we're going to do in this podcast, it's kind of a strange one. We already did, you know, just a couple days ago, our game week 26 recap. We looked ahead a little bit. So we're going to talk about game week 27. I think that a lot of people are already looking ahead to when they're going to play their chips, all the blanks that are coming up in game week 31. So we are going to talk about that after game week 27. Let's start with what's right in front of us. And then we're just going to start talking about like early chip theory. And, you know, this is like part one of 13, you know? So like, we're going to talk about this on every single podcast, probably until the season is over. So, you know, depending on, you know, where you are in your, and it's a little bit different for everybody, you know, I mean, not everybody has all three of their chips remaining. Not everybody has a wild card. And so, you know, the advice can change a lot, but what we can talk about are fixtures and blanks and preparation. We talk about our own teams a little bit, and hopefully all of that is instructive. I mentioned this on last week's podcast. I think it's really difficult to talk about chips and talk about transfer planning on audio and actually like, yeah. You know, and like be interesting for people to
listen. It would
work
better with a laser pointer and a big projection screen.
Exactly. Some sort of telestrator, you know, right. So I think we'll try to be very cautious of not getting too in the weeds when we talk about this stuff, just talking in broad strokes. And then obviously, you know, you can go to Twitter or our Slack or wherever and, you know, debate this a little bit further, but it's good to at least get your brain thinking about that. I mean, game week 31, there's so many blanks coming up that it's really already changing, you know, my transfer decision for game week 27. So, Brandon, let's talk about game week 27, but first, let's do a couple of Patreon thank yous.
Yeah. So we have two new Patreon subscribers this week at the Mbakani tier, Jamie Moon and Sway. Thank you both for your supporting of the pod. And if you'd like more information on what's involved in supporting the podcast, visit us at patreon.com/always cheating. Josh mentioned the kitchen table sessions, and we have our Slack supporters chat forum and various other treats for you. So yeah, head to patreon.com/always cheating for more info.
Yeah. And even though recording on Monday, I will be doing a kitchen table podcast on Thursday night. So keep an eye out for that.
I'm looking forward to that, Josh.
Oh, good. I'm looking forward to it, too, because I'm still not entirely sure what I'm going to be doing this game week. So yeah. let's
be clear, Josh, yeah. Josh, for those of you out there who don't know, Josh is having a phenomenal season. So pay attention to what he's saying.
Which thank you, Brandon. But the stakes. Yeah, it actually is causing me a lot of stress because I want to stay there. You know, I'm at 26-60 overall and I have all three chips and my wild card left. So I feel like with careful planning, I mean, even the top 500 is possible for me, which I'm saying it. I've been scared to even put that into words, Brandon. But there you go. I put it out there. That is my new goal for the season.
FPL general levels of success right there. I dig it. Let's go.
Exactly. Oh, and Brandon, just a quick side note too, before we get into game week 27. So we're doing, it's going to be a slightly shorter podcast this week, but if you stick around the second half of the podcast, we have an interview that we recorded at the Yale Soccer Conference with Pierre Moussa. Pierre Moussa is the coordinating producer for NBC's Premier League coverage. It's a fascinating interview. I learned so, so much. He's a fantastic guy, kind of my hero, as I mentioned in last week's podcast now.
Yes.
But we had a really long and extensive discussion with him. If you are at all interested in the production side of sports coverage, you know, how it gets on there, how you sort of, especially when it's international, how NBC and Sky Sports work together, all kinds of cool stuff. Stick around for that. It is really genuinely fascinating conversation.
Absolutely. Okay. You have a note here about spreadsheets, Josh. What's up with spreadsheets right now?
Yeah. So, just I want to just give a quick shout out. I mean, he gets a lot of shout outs, basically everywhere. But Ben Krellen, if you're not familiar, is just a great follow during this time of year. He is kind of an expert in planning for game week, for the blank game weeks and for the doubles. And he actually has a shared Google Doc that you can download and take a look at. And there's a lot of great advice on there. So
I'm in this Google document right now as we podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So I actually am too. So it's at Ben, C-R-E-L-L-I-N. So give him a follow and find out a lot of information about the doubles. And, I want to be straight up that we're actually, definitely using some of his advice for this podcast. Didn't want that to go unremarked upon. So, yeah. Brandon, game week 27, right around the corner, starts in, 4 days' time? Right around this time in 4 days. What does your team look like right now? I mean, it's a little tricky, right? Because Man City, Chelsea, Brighton, and Everton don't have matches.
Yeah, my team right now has two glaring holes in it, and they're from my Manchester City players, Leroy Sané and Sergio Aguero. Beyond that, I'm fielding a full team. I will not be fielding a full team as of this podcasting, because the three players on my bench, Laporte, also a City player blanking, Phil Billing presumably will play against Newcastle, though he missed out last game week. I feel like he's one of the more important midfielders for Huddersfield. But yes, I know no one wants to dwell too much about important players on Huddersfield. And then Balbuena, who's still injured in the back line for West Ham. So, and then there's this new flag that I'm experiencing in my team, Matt Doherty.
Yep, taken off in the 80th minute, right?
Yeah, still not a lot of news there on whether it's just an impact knock injury and then he could recover in time for Bournemouth in the weekend, or if it's something a little more serious. So we have to keep an eye on that. I would really like to not have to worry about Doherty going into 27, but there he is. So right now I'm thinking, what do I do? Well, the biggest decision I have to make is, do I take a -4 to play, to sub in somebody for Aguero up front, be it Laka or Aubameyang, or even Arnautovic, who I think we have to talk a bit more about, given plans percolating for game week 31. And then Leroy Sané, who I think is top of my list of people to get rid of. Even though he did play the full 90 in the FA Cup, but you could argue that if you're playing the full 90 in the FA Cup, that's even further proof that Pep really hates you.
Well, as we all know, he has not had a lot of minutes in the Premier League in recent
years. He's certainly fit for 90. That was no problem for him.
All right, so it sounds like you're almost going to have to take a -4, it sounds like.
Well, okay, so best case scenario, Doherty is fit. Phil Billing looks incredibly likely to start. Then I could just make a hokey cokey for Aguero up front with a striker, and then I could field a full 11.
Right. We have to note here that the Aubameyang move, which many of us were planning again, like this is the classic. This is why the hokey cokey, as we've all said before, as I've said many times before, just never seems to work. Like something always goes wrong. And so the first time it went wrong is because Aubameyang got sick, before the Huddersfield match. Worked out well for many of us, considering how well Aguero did at home in the Chelsea match. But now the concern is that Lacazette got sent off with a red card in the first leg of their Europa League match, which means he can't play in the second match, which means Aubameyang is likely to play in that match, especially because they're down one goal. They're not 1-0 in that leg.
Or
against Bate, thank you, going to the second leg. So, I mean, they're home. It should be fine. They should be able to win that match fairly easily. But there's a decent chance he plays. The issue there is, can Aubameyang play twice in 4 days? Sure. Or three days, I guess.
I think it's less than 72 hours is the hour-by-hour stat.
Right, and it's a home match anyways. But the problem is there is a midweek run of fixtures the next week as well. And then there's another run of fixtures the following game week. So you're in a position where – is Aubameyang going to play four times in 9 days? Yeah. I don't know. That seems a little less likely to me.
They did mention this. I was watching the Scoutcast captaincy discussion with David Munday and one of his guests, and they talked about a lot of the discussion leading into the festive fixtures. We were concerned about Aubameyang's rest, and he didn't miss a single start during the festive period. I think that this season's history and recent history does show that he has the ability and the fitness to just keep going.
Well, so fair enough. Yeah, that is true. It still feels tight to me, but especially because some of these matches that Arsenal playing are actually pretty easy matches. The kind of matches where maybe you could, maybe at home to Bournemouth in game week 28, he gets rested. I don't see him getting rested the way to Spurs in game week 29, obviously.
Does it feel tight to you? I agree that there is some tightness, but do you have some emotional cognitive dissonance here just because the stakes are a little bit higher, given that basically any transfer we're bringing in for game week 27 to me feels like it is a 1 week punt, for lack of a better word? Like, the stakes just seem higher with the game week 27 transfer.
What, 1 week punt because you want to bring Aguero back in, or what do you mean? Like,
yeah, I suppose. I suppose, but there's just, okay, so where I'm at right now, as I was saying, I'm caught between a minus four or not. I feel like I want to attack this game week a little bit, and I won't mind taking a minus four because I feel like there is, because United and Liverpool are clashing against each other, there is no like wide open fixture for some of my biggest attacking assets to just get out there and run free. So I'm feeling some pressure to find a big attacking asset that I think could score big.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that's Arnautovic. I've got to be honest with you. That seems a little dangerous to me. I mean, he didn't even start the last match, right? And he's been just, I mean, he just comes off with an injury like every single match. I mean, that just seems so risky. That is really the concern with Callum Wilson out for Bournemouth. I mean, you've already got Jimenez. It would be great if Batshuayi was actually starting, which he still hasn't done. I mean, we both feel like Jamie Vardy is washed up. Just looking up and down, there's just not a lot of excitement. I mean, you know, you could Llorente as a 1 week punt, maybe, you know, you could look at Ashley Barnes, Chris Wood. It just, there's nothing that like really gets the blood racing.
Well, and trust me, I'm not arguing against bringing in an Arsenal striker. I think that is probably the as of Monday, the smart move. And to what I'm saying, like an Arsenal striker, be it Aubameyang or Lacazette, I think is probably what feels like the quick and dirtiest way into some attacking points.
Yeah,
in 27.
I think so too. I mean, the question is whether I have any faith in Lacazette as like someone who can score like massive numbers. You know, like I don't know. I mean, like on the season, I think Lacazette, how many times has he actually finished in double figures in a game week? It doesn't seem like he has two double figure returns. The last one was in game week 8, and that was away to Fulham. I mean, it's just, you know, 9, 2, 7, 8, 2, 6, 1, 6, 5, 4. He's like, to me, I like him more as like a vice captain kind of pick, you know, which is fine. I think you could definitely we have a question here, Brandon, from Dave Newell. It says, who are the best captaincy options this week? It says, I'm actually thinking of captaining Pogba. Will I regret it? So maybe by talking about the captaincies, we could talk, that'll help us to, you know, sort out our transfer thoughts a little bit. So who do you think, who's your bus team captain right now?
Bus team captain right now is Mo Salah, and vice captain is on Paul Pogba. So I am backing the Liverpool Manchester United match as a shootout. I think that each team is going to score. And Liverpool's defense is a little rickety. You know, they're still missing a true central defensive pairing. Plus they have a major midweek match against Bayern Munich, which should be emotionally draining. And then to bounce back against one of their biggest league rivals in Manchester United. So that brings me to United, where I think that, you know, in the league, if you put the PSG result aside, they're still in tremendous form. And I think Paul Pogba being on penalties and being in the type of form that he is an interesting captaincy shout as well.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I actually do have it on Salah right now. It may depend on how he does in that match. I mean, Salah can be a little bit of a form player. I mean, like anybody, you know. And so I feel like if he scored a goal, had a goal and an assist or something like that at midweek, I think that would make me slightly more likely to captain him.
Yeah, right. Right. So, I mean, your team exactly, are you fielding a full 11 on your bus team right now?
I am fielding a full 11. I mean, it's a weird one because I have all five of my defenders are away. So, like, you know, right there, it's not great. But I am fielding a full 11 right now. Right now, I've got the captaincy on Salah. I've got the vice captaincy on Sun. I would consider captaining Sun, however, instead. I think that is a real possibility, something I might actually consider doing. You know, I've got Hoiberg starting right now.
Against the mighty Tom Heaton, who could stop anything?
I know. That is the worry. So, you know, I'm someone had a question here because I'm in a similar situation. Scott Kellard says, is only having 9 players this week and 4 of them playing each other acceptable? Is that wild card time? I think I would try to get to 10. I think 9. Okay, so here's my feeling about this game week is it's kind of a crap game week. I mean, I mentioned before, you've got Cardiff, Watford, West Ham, Fulham, Burnley, Spurs, Bournemouth, Wolves, Newcastle, Hutter. I mean, there are just – it's just crap, you know? Like, it's just – they're like – in the kind of the one – you don't have a lot of those kind of classic – like, the recipe for a good game week is a lot of classic, like, really good team at home to a bad team, you know? Mm-hmm. Or, like, ideally you want to be someone like Bournemouth, like a team that's actually going to try to play a little bit, you know? So, and not just like, you know, like park the bus. So, you know, but Man United playing Liverpool, that game feels like it's anybody's guess, you know, how that one's going to work out. Yeah. Arsenal, Southampton, I mentioned before, just that concern about the Europa League hangover, which just dampens their prospects a little bit. The other problem with Arsenal is that you can basically only bring in their forwards. Right. I mean, Kolasinac is like maybe a player you consider, but the midfield is dead. Right. Is there a single midfielder player you consider?
No, not a single one. Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Yeah. I feel like Alex, you know, like all these players, like you don't want a Wobi, you know, like there's no fun in having a Wobi. Like,
yeah, a Wobi is just, I applaud you if you want to go there and risk it, but it's a risk and it's a punt. And let's be clear about that.
The goal he scored was kind of a lucky deflection. So, I just don't see a lot of value in loading up on any of these, you know, and most of these fixtures. You know, I think the one team that is kind of tempting is West Ham at home to Fulham. I think, you know, Felipe Anderson is the one player that I'm really looking at right now. And Richarlison to Anderson is a move that I'm definitely considering. That move would get even more appealing if Chelsea beat Man United today. That means that there'd be a game week 31 blank for Everton. So kind of one less reason to hold on to Richarlison.
No news yet. We're 5 minutes into the Chelsea United Cup match, and it's 0-0. Yeah.
But what do you think? I mean, I think it's fine sometimes to only field 10 players, right? 9 or 10.
Yeah, well, as I mentioned, that's where I'm at right now. And it looks like I'll probably just be, if I burn 4, I'll be happy with a starting 11, and that's pretty much it. And you have to do that cost benefit analysis of, oh, if I field a team that's a little bit shy, instead of burning a -4, that could end up even being better than burning -4 to bring in a player that is probably not that great or sure to score you points and could end up with the 1 or 2 pointer for you.
All right.
So is it worth a -4 just to secure that you have a dead body in your starting 11?
All right. I've got a little game I'm going to play for you here. Just to wrap up this game week 27 discussion, because I want to get into some of this chip talk stuff.
Yeah.
All right. So here's my question, Brad. I'm going to go through all 8 of these fixtures. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you are going to tell me if there's a player on either team that's worth burning -4 for. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Cardiff, Watford.
No, I don't.
No, there's no one. That one's an easy one. I started with an easy one. West Ham, Fulham.
Yeah, you could make the case for Felipe Anderson here, I think.
Me too.
Yeah.
I think he's the only player that I think would be worth burning for. I would rather have no third forward than Arnautovic, I have to say. I mean, he could totally go off, but I feel like he could also like play 58 minutes and get 1 point. You know,
burn -4 for Sergio Rico?
I don't think so. I don't. Yeah. Yeah,
smart man.
Exactly.
That's why you're having a good season, Josh.
Yeah, that's true.
Smart play.
Okay, Burnley Spurs. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, I'm feeling
-4 for Sun.
So there is much talk around Sun right now, and I don't know if it's just these Spurs owners against these Spurs non-owners, but the fact that Spurs have been winning these games that based on 90 minutes should not have won Leicester or Newcastle, or they're kind of winning at the death, mm-hmm. and they're not passing the eye test. That is the non-owner argument. The owner of Son argument is just look at this guy. This guy's in intense form,
right.
particularly in FPL, where he's just like scoring, 11 goals since he came back from the Asian Cup?
Scored the opening goal in the Dortmund match too.
Yeah, yeah, even in the Champions League. But the argument here as for me as a non-owner is are we coming up against the gambler's fallacy of he's due for a blank? And I don't know. It's just the form is defying expectation. It's Mo Salah-esque form.
Okay, I think that he is worth burning 4-4, and I think he's a very viable captain choice this weekend. In fact, I'm starting to talk myself into captaining him. So,
there's no credence to the form of the Burnley defense and them playing at home?
I don't know, not really. I mean, they haven't played a lot of really tough teams during this stretch. I'm not that sold on this team. I think they're okay. You know, I mean, I do think that Heaton coming back has helped, and I think that their form is better. But I mean,
yeah.
I would be shocked if Spurs didn't score in that match. I honestly think that there's a good chance that Son is in the points.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if they conceded in that match. I wouldn't burn forward to bring in a Spurs, defender.
Right.
Especially because you never know who's going to actually start in a game week. Yeah. All right. Bournemouth Wolves. Anyone worth burning four in Bournemouth Wolves?
No. I mean, Bournemouth's attacking prospects, there's too many injuries there. That's a problem. And then Wolves, you probably already have a couple of Wolves players, so you're not burning four.
Yeah. What about Newcastle Huddersfield?
Rondon is an interesting one here for me for a -4. I think you could say him.
Yeah, it's close. I was actually thinking maybe even like a possible Newcastle defender. I mean, mm-hmm. Huddersfield is, I mean, you may only end up getting 2 points out of that, but you're also investing in a team that has a lot of good fixtures coming up.
Yeah.
So it might be worth the hit in that case because you have Huddersfield at home, followed by Burnley at home, followed by Everton at home 2 weeks after that.
And Newcastle will be a key game week 31 blank team, which we'll maybe we'll touch upon in our chip talk.
Yeah, and there was a question from Minato. He said, "What's the best Newcastle defensive asset?" I think it's Jamal Lascelles. That's the one that I'd be the most likely to pick up.
Yeah.
4.6 million. Guaranteed starter in that team, he's the captain. Scored 3 goals last season, only has one this season, but he was injured for a big stretch of the year. So, I think he's the one that I would consider. I mean, Yedlin's fine too. I think that, Yedlin or Lascelles, I'll slightly lean towards Lascelles.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I mean, Shar is an interesting prospect that's just come into form.
Sure.
But, and he gets forward like nobody else, but you do have to really like Lascelles on set pieces, and I think he's due a goal this season.
All right, three more. Leicester, Crystal Palace.
No.
I mean, who would you trust? I mean, we all like James Maddison. I think he's a fun player to watch, but I mean, he's really he's like one assist in 7 games or something like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And similar to what you were saying about Newcastle, the one appealing type of asset here would be a Leicester defender, not necessarily
true.
For this match, but looking long-term.
That's a good point. Yeah. So yep. Pereira, possibly Dean de mm-hmm. Pereira, maybe yep. that would be like a reasonable -4. Uh-huh. All right. Arsenal, Southampton. We kind of talked about this already. I think, you could burn four for one of their two forwards. I think either one. Burning four for Kolasinac, I don't love that.
No. Yeah. The Arsenal defensive form is quite abysmal, and
yep.
They're playing really young players on the flanks for Southampton. Let's see, would Kolasinac be running at Valerie? Because that could be an interesting matchup, a young, smaller Valerie against Kola. But yeah, that said, you can't really trust the Arsenal defense, and you're mm-hmm. really just banking on Kolasinac getting into the box and attempting an assist.
Yeah, and I actually thought Southampton played Arsenal pretty well the first time they played. What was it, like 5 or 6 weeks ago, the first half of this leg. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't love that. And then Man United, Liverpool, kind of interesting one because obviously most people already have a few players, from both teams.
Right.
What about someone like Sadio Mane?
Yeah, for a minus four, particularly if you're looking to toward game week 31 and that blank and starting to stock up. Yeah, that would be an interesting differential pick.
It's reasonable. All right, Brandon, that is our game week 27 discussed. It feels very fluid right now. I don't feel like we've totally, you know, we'll talk about this more on Twitter, you know, throughout the week. But I think right now there are various viable captaincy choices. We got to wait till the Champions League is really wrapped up to know for sure. But I think that it's kind of I like it when there is a lot of like a lot of captaincy ambiguity. I just think it makes the game more fun. You know, and I think right now you could look at Arsenal's forwards. You could look at a multitude of players in Man United, Liverpool, you know, possibly Son, possibly your boy, Raul Jimenez.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, maybe. I think that's enough on game week 27. Let's move into chips after a short break. All right, Brandon, we're back. It is chip time. Brandon, I'm going to start off with a true or false here. True or false, Brandon, chips are slightly gimmicky, and I wish that they had not been added to the FPL game.
True. That's true. I mean, we're old timers, like many people listening. We're old timers, and many people pine for the olden times when there were no chips. I mean, chips have added another level and another dimension, but they do skew our thinking to this time of year.
I'm also probably biased. I also think I'm just biased because I think they're hard to talk about because it's like it's different for everybody. It's like talking about beauty or something. It's like,
wow,
that may be like that a series profound, of podcasts. Man. These series of podcasts where we just talk about beauty, you know, and it's like, well, it's all relative and it sort of depends on your perspective. And, you know, it's like we can't issue any definitive proclamations. And so that's kind of how I feel about chip theory and what to do. And so
is there any So just on that beauty point, soccer, football, it's called the beautiful game. Is that
yes?
Have you just pulled the thread on that tagline for the sport? And that you can't really call something blanket in a blanket way a beautiful game because it is entirely subjective.
Wow, that's profound. Wow. I think we should stop the podcast for like an hour and just think about that and come back.
It could be an ugly game, and that's fine. That's okay.
All right, Brandon. All right, we're back. We paused it for an hour. We thought about beauty, and now we are here to talk about the blanks. So just, again, because I am conscious of not getting some of the weeds of this stuff. If this is your first time playing the fantasy game, you know, chips are there's the triple captain, the bench boost, the free hit chip, and then the wild card, you know, where you can remake your team is also considered a chip. So these are all things that many managers have been sort of holding off on until we have these double game weeks and these blank fixtures. And that's the time when we want to use them. There's no sort of right answer for when to use them. And so, chip discussion has like really ramped up over the last couple of days because we now know, with the exception of today's match, who all of the quarterfinalists will be, in the FA Cup. And those teams that are in the quarterfinals will have a blank in game week 31. So right now we already know that Man City, Brighton, Man United, Wolves, Crystal Palace, Watford, Spurs, Cardiff, Arsenal, and Southampton will not be playing in game week 31. And it's also possible that Chelsea and Everton won't play in game week 31 either if Chelsea win today. So ton of teams don't play in game week 31. The issue there is that a lot of those teams that don't play in 31 will then have two matches in game week 32. It tends to be those very same teams that have two matches. So the question then becomes, how many players do you want to load up on for game week 31 in order to, you know, have some coverage that game week, without being totally caught out in game week 32. So right now I have a team that looks amazing for game week 32 and a team that has like four players for game week 31.
Yeah, I have four as well.
Yeah, and so the question is, do I spend the next few game weeks loading up on those players that will play that game week? And then do I, you know, or do I just play the free hit chip in game week 31 and just continue continue on with the players that I have right now?
Yeah, stick to the plan.
The issue there, though, is a lot of those players then go on and blank again in game week 33. So there's, but that we can't talk too much. And again, this is why it's so hard to talk about this on a podcast, because we can't talk too much about 33 yet, because we don't know exactly which teams are going to blank. It depends on how they do in game week 31.
Yep.
Got it.
I think what we can discuss now, though, given the FA Cup results that we understand, is game weeks 31 and 32, sort of the kickoff of chip season. And there are two ways to play this that are now circulating, two big theories. Mm-hmm. And one, as you mentioned, is to build a squad that you can field in game week 31 and then free hit in 32.
Yeah.
The appeal of the free hit into 32 is you can build a custom team for these big double game weeks.
Right.
And then you save your wild card for the future double in game week 35. So where do you land here? Do you think that there's bigger upside to have the ability to build a custom starting 11 for game weeks 32 and 35 to fully maximize the double? And if you think that you really want to be aggressive in those doubles, I think there's a lot to be said about this strategy to play the free hit in 32 and wild card into 35.
Okay. My feeling right now is that I would rather continue to build for game week 32 and just play the free hit in game week 31. And here's my biggest concern, Brandon. The teams that I wanted to start loading up with in order to have a fieldable team in game week 31 suck. Like, they almost all suck.
Yeah.
Like, I have three Liverpool players already. That's like the one team that's good, that has a blank. Thank God, right? They've got a blank in 31. But otherwise, I'm going to have to load up on Huddersfield players, Burnley players, Bournemouth players, Leicester, Fulham, Newcastle, West Ham. I don't want players from those teams. You know, I just like maybe West Ham. Maybe I want Felipe Anderson. I don't want anyone in Newcastle particularly, right? I don't want anyone on Fulham. I don't want anyone from Leicester, really, even though their fixtures are good. Yeah. I don't want anyone from Bournemouth. I don't want anyone from Huddersfield in particular, right? And yeah. Burn, like what am I going to drop Raul Jimenez for Ashley Barnes, you know, just so I'm ready for – it's just like the thought of taking all of my good players out of my team – and replacing them with crap players for the next several game weeks in order to have players who will more than likely give me 2 points anyway in game week 31.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel very appealing to me. So that's kind of where I'm leaning.
Yeah. And I hear you. And that's totally logical. And something that we always harp on is the Walcott effect, and how we're going to set our sights on building this crap team for game week 31 without thinking more short term and all the points that we stand to gain from game weeks 27 through game weeks 30. And shifting off all these, like you were saying, Wolves assets and City and United assets. For what? You know, we're going to be losing their points in the short term just to get some crap squad for 31. But it's a balance of how much do you think you're going to lose in the short term versus gain when you sort of release the Kraken, when the chips start falling.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, if Chelsea loses tonight, then they and Everton both play in 31. I would then have six players because I still have Richarlison. But then I'd have to keep Richarlison. You know, it's just, again, it's just like there's no. Yeah. It's just very tricky. So
I'll tell you another way I'm looking at game week 31. If it's not free hit, sort of like what we were saying about game week 27 with the meager four teams that aren't playing. I wouldn't feel bummed if I only fielded a team of nine players in game week 31. It's just not going to be a huge haul of a game week. And I think so long as you have Mo Salah against Fulham and captain him, then you're probably going to be able to just at least tread water. So it's not like I'm looking to build a full 11 and a deep bench ahead of game week 31. I think that so long as you just have a modest team that's ready to play then.
So, I mean, let's say that you are trying to get to 9 or 10 players then for 31. I mean, where would you be looking at? I mean, I guess Felipe Anderson.
Yeah, okay. So you would target, obviously, 3 for Liverpool. You're looking at probably a defender and attacker from Newcastle.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe one or two attacking assets from West Ham, somebody from a defender from Leicester. And a defender. It feels heavily defensive to me because I'm looking at Burnley, Newcastle, Leicester, and West Ham. Of those three, Well, but then you're going to be starting probably Andy Robertson in that Liverpool fixture. So there's a shortage of attacking players. You do wonder how Bournemouth is going to be looking heading into game week 31. If Wilson is healthy again, maybe Junior Stanislas is back and David Brooks, then that Bournemouth fixture against Newcastle looks kind of promising from an attacking point of view.
That's true. That's true. But just the thought of taking it like Paul Pogba for David Brooks one game week, you know, it's just like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the way you have to look at it is that's the end of the line for your current team. And the next iteration of your team will be a wild card. So you're slowly building this weird team for the blank 31. You free hit in 32. And then your next move is probably a wild card to get all those players back that you want.
And what, 30? But then you could try wildcarding in 33, maybe. But there's a lot of blanks that game week. So
you would free hit in right. No, you can't free hit because you free hit in 32. Where's my laser pointer at? yeah, I guess you wild.
I love that sigh. Yeah, you have to maybe wildcard in 34, right? Maybe into 35.
It's the sigh of this is the perfect plan. How could it fail? And then you only get so far as game week 33 and you're like, really? This is the plan?
Yeah. I mean, this is because then again, exactly. Because you're going to want a wild card early too. Because if you're loading up on, you know, West Ham and Newcastle and Huddersfield players, like that's not like a team. That is not a team that's going to win anything, you know? So it's like. So, okay, there's a question from FPL Bothan. He says, and I'm sorry, we have a ton of questions here. We're going to end up skipping most of them because I feel like we're talking about them already. But FPL Bothan says, what would be the minimum amount of players we should be fielding in game week 31 if we're not using a free hit chip? So let's say we're not free hitting in 31. What is the – how many would you be okay with? You said 9 earlier. I wonder if you'd get away with even less, maybe 8?
Yeah, I mean, if you turned around and said 8, then, yeah, I wouldn't say, well, you got to burn 4. No. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be, that level of a game week, 7, 8, 9, 10 players, roll with it.
Yeah, I think that would be fine.
It's going to be, this is something I brought up. I think it was on one of my kitchen table sessions was the idea of everyone is going to have the armband on Mo Salah in game week 31. The game week is going to come down to how well Mohamed Salah plays. Maybe this is a week in which you break out the triple captain chip. Mm-hmm. You can't gain any ground this week unless you happen to have a good differential on a team like Newcastle or West Ham, as we mentioned.
Yeah.
A triple captain on Mo Salah could be a way for you to just cover points that you're missing out on if you're fielding, you know, a smaller squad.
The thing I want to highlight here is, Brian, we're talking, we just previewed game week 27 and now we're talking about game week 31. And I think there's a real concern here that people are just going to be too focused on game week 31 and forget about game weeks 28, 29, and 30, you know, and then, and then all the moves are going to be about taking out players for game week 31. And what you're going to be doing is just taking out good players for mediocre players, every single transfer in order to have, in order to have players for 31. And I just think that's, even if I don't free hit in game week 31, I don't want to have that many players because I just don't see even the players who are going to play getting that many points.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's losing those short-term points just for this 31. Yeah, it does seem silly. Yeah. I agree.
I think you're right, though. I think that Bournemouth is the team to target I wouldn't even have a goalkeeper for these matches. So I don't know. It's just very tricky. So Peter Lutsky says, transfer strategy talk for those without a wild card. Anything different if you don't have a wild card?
I think a lot is different because, if we're talking about with regard to the doubles, you really have to be focused, I think, more on the doubles than the blanks.
Brandon, by the way, there is a goal in Man United Chelsea. Ander Herrera, the goal machine, has scored for Man United.
Okay, so that's good. That's good for game week 31. We just got a few more assets. Well, we're veering toward having
a few. No, it's bad. Yeah, we've just lost. No, that's bad. If Oh, wait. That's right. No, that would be good. I'm sorry. I'm confusing myself. I shouldn't have done that update.
We are so through the looking glass in this episode that, no one knows anymore. But, yeah, if Chelsea lose this match, as you said earlier, Josh, Chelsea-Everton is on for game week 31. So suddenly everyone's favorite FPL asset, Eden Hazard, comes back into the fray.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, if you don't have a wild card, I just feel like the big upside weeks are going to be for game weeks 32 and 35, where there are big doubles and you have to target them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Don't worry about the blanks. Worry about the doubles. You know, field mediocre teams for the blanks. Just make sure you've got the captainable assets. And in 31, that's definitely Mo Salah or maybe Sadio Mane. In game week 33, it's kind of the same, right? I mean, Liverpool play Southampton in that match. Arsenal play Everton in that game week too. So that'd be another, contender.
And don't get too stressed out. So if you have played a couple of your chips already, where you land at the end of the season, it's overall points. So if you played your chip earlier, if you played your wild card earlier, I hope upon hope that you got a boost in points there. And maybe some people are going to marginally catch up with you while they play their chips. But the goal is to get the most points by the end of the season. Whether you did that before this point or whether you've waited this long, it's all good.
Yeah, are they closer to these big double game weeks than they were last season? It feels like it used to be like 33 and 37 or something like that. Now it feels like everything is like way more compressed this year.
Yeah, it does. I feel like it's just going to fly by with the blink of an eye.
Yeah, not in a fun way, Brandon. in a bad way. All right, so let's see. We've got a couple more questions here. Josh Biggs says, should I ditch Richarlison or leave him because he doesn't blank in game week 31? Well, if Chelsea end up winning, then he would have a blank. But let's assume that Man United win today. What would you do with a player like Richarlison? Do you hold him for four more weeks just because he doesn't blank?
Right. This kind of crystallizes everything that we've been talking about, because here's a player who's out of form. He's on a team that they're not in great form. Their fixtures are kind of turning. Do you ride a player just because he has a future game week, like five game weeks from now? I think.
And that game week is home to Chelsea. Not even a good match.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm feeling like it's time to ship Richarlison on regardless and just change your plans. And that's just a smart, shrewd decision that you have to make.
I think that it might change the Lucas Dean discussion a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you still had both of those players, I still have Dean, and now I might be slightly more inclined to keep him in my squad.
Okay.
They play Cardiff in game week 28. I mean, that's a good fixture for him.
Well, is Dean Newcastle in any better form than Richarlison is?
I don't know. I mean, he almost scored in game week 26. He did get the red card, but I don't know. It wasn't like, he's been pretty, he's just weird. It's just a weird year for him, to be honest. It's just I don't know what to say about Dean.
Like, Everton is always this team. They were this team last year as well. I keep bringing up Theo Walcott and how he plays into these long-term strategy discussions, because it was a Walcott on Everton. He was in form. Mm-hmm. We all brought him in with like future double game weeks in mind, and then the team form went terribly and he didn't perform in the doubles. So it's Everton yet again here with Richarlison and Dean, and this is our big problem now going into game week 27, is all these temptations, all these theories. What it comes down to is think about it, strategize about it, but still play the game week that's directly in front of you.
All right, Brad, we've got a couple more questions here. First one comes from FPL Vise. Says, the only chip I have left is a free hit. I'm planning on optimizing for game week 32 and using my free hit in game week 31. What do I need to be wary of after game week 32?
Well, I think you have to be wary of what the blanks could be. So we'll know after the next round of FA Cup fixtures how many blanks will actually be happening in 33.
Mm-hmm.
And that, of course, then plays into the doubles in 35.
Right. So the big issue there, is I think it is that game week 33 has all of these blank fixtures. And we don't know how many. I think there can be like a max of four, because it's like if certain teams win, not everyone can have, I don't know, it's kind of complicated to talk about on the podcast, but like basically there's only so many blanks you could have because some teams will beat other teams if they get matched up against each other. So that the team that that loses will end up having a match. But it looks likely that Man City, Wolves, Man United, and Watford, at the very least, will be off that game week.
Yeah.
Other teams like Palace, Brighton, Chelsea kind of remains to be seen.
I think this is kind of the question that's being asked too. If you're free hitting, you free hitting 31, presumably you wild card and 32 or maybe not. But point is, as say you're wild carding into 32, I think you have to wild card with 32 and 35 in mind.
Yeah, I think so too. I actually kind of like my team as a bench boost team in game week 32. Like right now, it's like if I was wildcarding, I would actually have a team very similar to my current team, which is kind of interesting. And so I feel like if I really commit right now to the game week 32 bench boost, then I have to commit to the to doing the free hit in 31. And I'm just going to spend all my transfers loading up on those players. It's very tricky. I'm telling you, Brandon.
It is tricky. Right, what's the next question?
All right, final question, Brandon, is, and again, we're going to talk about chips a lot more in the upcoming podcast. So final question here is from FPL Rambo. He says, I've used all my chips and I triple captain Sané in double game week 25. I am currently ranked 99K. Can I keep a spot in the top 100K?
Yeah, I think so. Well... It's going to be tough.
I think so, too.
Yeah, it's going to be tough.
It's possible. I think it's worth keeping in mind that these double game weeks tend to – okay, so we just saw, like, a pretty explosive double game week. It sort of depends on how you look at it. I mean, we had, like, a lot of people who had Sané, and that didn't work out. You had a lot of people who had Aguero, and it did. Obviously, you know, Laporte as well. But you kind of saw the whole like spectrum there. Sometimes double game week, a lot of people captain someone who blanks over two game weeks. Other times, you know, you can captain Aguero and he gets you, you know, 25 points tripled or whatever if you triple captain him. It's just you never really know exactly what you're going to get. So I think if you don't have any of those chips, I mean, you can still have some of these players. You know, you still have a captaincy chip. You can still captain double game week players.
The thing working against Rambo is if there is a popular triple captaincy choice that emerges, which there isn't right now. So that works to Rambo's advantage. But if there were, if one emerges and it hits in a big way, then that would be the one thing that could sink your overall rank in a major way. But if that doesn't happen, I think there is a way to hold firm.
I think it goes back to that comment we had on Peter Oleski's post, which is, you know, what happens if you don't have a wild card? And it's just focus on the doubles. Don't worry about the blank game weeks. You know, load up on the double game week players.
Yep, exactly. All right, so chip talk. It doesn't stop until the end of the season.
No, it'll never stop. Even in the offseason, Brandon, we'll be talking about new chip theories for next season. It's never going to end.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back to recap everything we said and throw it to our Pierre Moussa interview.
Excellent.
Josh, let's talk about our friends at Starting 11, the live Premier League fantasy app for your iPhone or Android phone. You can play for free or for cash prizes. Any day in which there are two or more Premier League matches, we're talking so much right now about blank fixtures, double game week fixtures. How do you build the perfect squad ahead? You have all this long-term planning. With Starting 11, you don't have to worry about it. Just pick up the app and start putting together your best 11-man squad that day for those fixtures that are happening. You have no budgetary restrictions. You can make tweaks to your lineups even after team sheets are announced. And then you can make three live in-game substitutions as the games are being played. Cash games are now live in the UK, US, Canada, and Germany if you're playing on your iPhone. If you're on an Android device, you can also play for cash in the UK, or just pick up the app and play for free wherever you are. Also, challenge your friends, join mini leagues, all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, and I just feel like if your season, you know, the fantasy game, you know, the reason that we're here talking about this podcast, it's mostly for pride, you know? Like we like put we have our $50 cup, a little cash on the line. But sometimes I feel like, you know, it's nice just to like play for pure hard cash, Brandon. Actual money. You're not planning 7 game weeks ahead. You are just looking at the game week in front of you, building the perfect squad for that one game week, and you're playing for cash prizes. That is a lot of fun.
Yep. So download Starting 11 today. Just visit the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, or visit starting11.io for more details and helpful video tutorials on how to get the most out of the app.
Brandon, don't waste your time gambling on things you don't understand. Be smart and participate in a game that you do. Go to starting11.io to learn more. All right, Brandon, we're back. We're going to head now into our interview with Pierre Moussa. As I mentioned before, he's the coordinating producer for NBC's Premier League coverage. He's also coordinated a number of Super Bowls. He's won
16 Emmy Awards.
I was going to say, and it was more than 10. Yeah, 16 Emmys total. He is an incredibly impressive person, you know, one of the absolute top voices and minds in sports media in the United States. And he works with brands all across the world. Really great interview. I learned a ton from this conversation. I hope you will too.
Okay, we're here with Pierre Moussa, the coordinating producer of NBC Sports and their Premier League coverage here in the States. Pierre, you've basically done everything in terms of sports producing and live TV coverage. How is it that you came to the Premier League specifically? Was it a passion project? Was it a challenge that your boss posed to you? You mentioned to us earlier that you grew up in Liverpool, so you're a lifelong football fan. Family is from Liverpool.
To give you a little bit of background, well, first of all, thank you guys for having me. A little bit of background, my family's from Liverpool. Mom born and raised there. Dad went to medical school there. My grandfather was season ticket holder at Anfield. So growing up as a little kid, I was always aware of Liverpool, not necessarily of the Premier League. And at that time, obviously, that was top tier of football before the Premier League started. So I was always familiar with it and the passion behind it. But growing up in the States, born and raised in the States, my passions were always more towards the traditional American sport, specifically American football. Loved it. And so going throughout college and high school, I was able to get the opportunity to work at NBC Sports as a runner, gopher. You take out the trash, you get coffee for people. And with my family being over in Europe, it tended to be summer jobs of working the French Open and Wimbledon, earning enough money to fly over there, visit my grandmother in between, and then earn enough money to fly back. So as I went through college and I graduated from college with an engineering degree, I kind of was like, all right, what am I doing next? And I wasn't really ready to sit behind a desk and wear a coat and tie, as you look at me wearing a coat and tie sitting behind a desk. So
it was inevitable.
It was inevitable. I don't know how it all ended up happening. And with my experience of working in television and working on many NBC projects in the summers, I moved to New York City, and that's how I got started in television and worked on many different projects. It's a long way of saying that as I worked on many different projects, I worked on Sunday Night Football for many years under Fred Gaudelli and Dick Ebersol and Drew Esikoff, who were all mentors to me. And when I had graduated my responsibilities from there, I was given the responsibility of helping launch Major League Soccer and working on that project. And that was really when I started getting more involved in the sport of soccer, football. Mm-hmm. And as that sport grew and grew, and I clearly remember being in Philadelphia, covering a Philadelphia game with Arlo and Kyle, and the phones start pinging, and I was with a guy named Shaw Brown, who I don't know if you guys are familiar with, produces for Fox as well, and we had worked together at NBC at the time as a producer for Major League Soccer, and the phones are pinging, and everybody's saying, NBC got the Premier League, everybody's in the Premier League, and they all look at me, and I go, oh, that's great, we got the Premier League, that's awesome, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, that's going to be a lot of work for somebody, that's going to be a ton of work for somebody else. Needless to say, you know, this is going on, and then the next day, my boss, Sam Flood, comes to me and goes, hey, would you like to work on this project? And I said, absolutely. And that was really how I got started. And so I would say that it's something that you mentioned the word passion. It is an absolute passion project. It's something that has been the most rewarding experience I've ever had in all of my television experiences. And we really, really, truly believe as a company that we're growing the game of football, growing the game of soccer, and it's something that you know, my dad uses this all the time in his job and his career was a vocation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a company-wide effort. We're really behind the Premier League and the growth of soccer, and we think it's really special. So, in short, it was something that was an opportunity that was granted to me by my bosses and has turned into being one of the most impactful things I've been a part of. Mm-hmm. But the success of it, I have to stress, is an entire group effort. And that's not just on a production side. That is on all aspects of the company, from the marketing, the digital, the social, you name it. The entire company's behind it. And it's been a lot of fun to be a part of such a rewarding experience.
Well, I was just going to say that it's so rare to – I mean, you guys are almost – I feel like you almost universally – the coverage is almost universally respected. I mean, you know, as someone who grew up, you know, with American sports as well, I mean, you know, you talk about X company's coverage of X sport, you'll find a lot of people who are kind of haters, and I feel like that's really not the case with NBC's coverage at all.
I do wonder if that has something to do with the fact that the Premier League is right at that moment where it's really spiking in growth, and everyone is rooting for NBC to succeed, because I agree the collegiality, the empathy, the enthusiasm, the group nature of it all really comes through in the broadcast. And I'll say that just for the benefit of our listeners abroad who don't get to experience NBC coverage.
Right. Yeah, we spent a week in the UK last fall watching matches. That was just kind of an interesting experience. I actually have a couple of questions about that. Maybe I'll just jump into one of those right now. So
they do things in the UK very differently. Yeah. But I want to be clear that it's what appeals to your audience. Their coverage is exceptional, but it's a different style. And I think, you know, especially for us, part of when we started launching the Premier League was it was important to understand what had been done prior. It's important to understand what's done in the UK. And then it was important to take a step back and say, all right, let's not think about this as soccer. How would you cover the NFL? How do you cover the Olympics? How do you cover golf? How do you cover all these other sports? And think of it that way. And that's kind of what molded our approach to covering the Premier League, was taking our experiences from an Olympics where you're covering a sporting event in another country and bridging that geographical gap. Yeah. You know, you understand what the hardcore fans and the way that people that know it in and out are covering it. Yeah. And then you understand our culture of if this was the NFL during the 1 o'clock games, we'd be telling the scores and giving highlights immediately. Yeah. So I know that wasn't normally done in the past, and I know that some of the hardcore fans were upset that you're giving away scores, but if you're doing 1 o'clock games or you're covering the NBA and there's a million games going on, or baseball, tonight, that's the way you would treat it. So you have to take all the different ways of sport and then come together and figure out your approach and how NBC wanted to approach it. That's kind of how ours has been molded, but it's definitely been molded more towards our audience, just like the Sky and BBC and BT's coverage in the UK is more molded to what their audience appeals to. Their audience.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about because Gold Rush to me is kind of like the red zone of you know, Premier League coverage. Mm-hmm. I mean, as this is a fantasy podcast, you know, we both of us I think are pretty dedicated Gold Rush watchers in general.
Yes, at the 10 o'clock on the East Coast, 10 a.m. that slate of fixtures, right. you're firing up the Gold Rush. Maybe if like our club is playing, we'll have a second screen experience where we're watching that full match. Right. But Goal Rush is a blessing to fantasy managers, yes. So you never miss a goal, which is fantastic.
Yeah, we messed around a little bit in season two with what we call Breakaway, which is essentially Goal Rush. Mm-hmm. And at the time, you know, our fans may, an audience may not have been 100% ready for it because it was so intense. And mm-hmm. a lot of people got, you know, a lot of the feedback was, whoa, it's way too, you know, too much, because there was the traditional way of viewing the game where the people were used to and watching the 90 minutes uninterrupted, and you DVR and you watch that other game 90 minutes interrupted. Yeah. And so Goal Rush has been a nice, you know, that was maybe we were too aggressive with that. Goal Rush has slowly been able to give people that opportunity to find that balance, because what Goal Rush did was it always keeps one main game and you bounce in and out of other highlights versus us just bouncing around. Yeah. But ultimately, as a fan, and I truly believe Goal Rush will eventually become something a bit more mainstream. Yeah. But right now, as we further, you know, experiment and evolve the approach, it's a great offering online.
There's the other I forget the name.
Mosaic, which
is kind of like, it's like tapping into the Matrix. You know, every now and then I'm like, all right, let me put up Mosaic.
Let me give you the genesis behind this. So you've seen our studio before, which has the big wall.
Yeah. Yes.
So once the studio, we go to the games, we pop up all the games in the studio, just like in the control room where you're watching all the games.
Yeah.
And visitors come by, or all of a sudden you look around, there'll be like four or five people standing behind you in the control room, and they're trying to watch all these games. Right. Like, they're thinking like, God, this is so cool. I can't believe we're watching all these games. We had the Premier League come to visit us, and they're like, we love this. This is great watching all these games. And so you'd sit in the studio, and the talent be watching all the games, and candidly, and I'll tease Kyle, because I know Kyle sometimes can't focus on that many games, so he has to go in the corner and walk up and focus on one.
Yeah.
But joke joking aside, that's where the genesis came from, was all these people would be like, wow, this is so cool, watching all these games at once. And we're like, why don't we just offer this? I mean, this is just an awesome one. And so that's where the Match Mosaic came from, was this is what we look at every single day in the weekend for us. It's normal, so you don't think much of it. Yeah. But when all these guests and people come by going, this is the coolest thing in the world, you're like, well, maybe we should be offering this to people.
I have a 2.5-year-old who typically commandeers the main screen Saturday morning. So for me, if I can have my laptop and I only watch one thing, I like to put the mosaic on and I can kind of... Like, it just keeps my, like, obsessiveness in check a little bit.
Yeah, right.
I sort of keep it on everything.
Yeah, Paw Patrol, Thomas the Tank. You know, I'm fighting with my son. I don't want to watch soccer. I want to watch Paw Patrol.
Yeah.
And you're, like, kind of negotiating what ends up happening is you're on the small TV or your laptop.
Exactly.
And he's got the big TV, and that's the way it works. So.
Kick a ball.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is a good segue into more of a fantasy-focused talk. So as you can tell from the official Fantasy Premier League site, you can drill down to who is a fantasy manager who says they're from the United States.
Yeah.
And of those people, there are more than 225,000 active.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're thinking about NBC's treatment of the Premier League in the States, things like Goal Rush and Mosaic, is there any consideration given to the fantasy experience, or just more broadly, what kind of appeal you can have in the broadcast to somebody who's playing the fantasy game?
Well, I'll take the first part. We don't do anything specific for a specific audience.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to give everybody all the options they can. And ultimately, if they appreciate and enjoy the experience, they're all going to come back to the product. And I think it starts off with the product. And Premier League's coverage itself from Sky, BBC, and BT is exceptional. And the skill on the pitch is amazing. So, but it could be something as a podcast. It could be digital offerings, it could be streaming, it could be Match Mosaic, it could be all the different digital offerings from Roto World and a Pro Soccer Talk. We just want to give people avenues to which they can appreciate the Premier League. And that was probably the biggest complaint we received, is the majority of our audience has only been following the Premier League over the last 6 years. So they're always looking for more, and how do we get all that background that a lot of the hardcore fans have had. So to that, there is not a specific thing we do to target a specific group.
Yeah.
It's more giving everybody as many options as they can. With regards to doing more things for the fantasy fan, to me, it goes back to the hardcore, the basics. Highlights and information. That's what people want. And again, you're servicing all the fans. So we put a premium in highlights, the way we cover them, the way we do that. And our on-air broadcast team and the group back in the VT land, the videotape area, they put a premium on the breakdowns, the telestrations, any way they can help. It's not just that was a beautiful goal, it's why that was a beautiful goal. Yeah. So as a group, they, as in our announced team and our highlight group, really, really make sure that they do the best possible job when it comes to highlights and analysis and also information.
Yeah.
Whether it's research, stats, or perspective. Hey, by the way, City's got a really tough stretch. They're in four competitions and they only have a 2.5-day break between all their matches versus Liverpool, which is only in two competitions, has an average of 5 days break. Just those kind of things can give people that proper perspective. So it's less of let's do something specific to fantasy folks. Let's do something that's going to help benefit the Premier League fan, appreciate what's going on, and ultimately that's going to help the fantasy fan.
Even just the film, the film itself. I mean, I wish I don't think in the NFL you have that same thing where you can just watch. You know, we're traveling back from New Haven to New York tomorrow, and we're like, you know what? Let's not watch. Let's not even track the Chelsea-Man City game because we know we'll be able to watch it on the commute home because we'll be able to pull it up on our iPads and watch it. And so it's a great fan experience.
Hold that thought. So I don't think I'm misremembering this, but correct me if I'm wrong, Pierre. We were at the original BlazerCon that was a number of years ago in Brooklyn in Greenpoint, and there was a panel with Kyle Martino. I think Rebecca Lowe was there. They were talking about constantly tweaking the formula in the studio and talking about all the footage you have access to and what to do with it. They're in the studio before match talking about what they're anticipating for the matches ahead. And then you realize you have all this live footage of the players prepping on the pitch ahead of game. Well, why not just share that footage for the viewer while they talk about the pregame talking points? And I thought that was really interesting. You guys are just sifting through all of this footage and figuring out how best to use it and what the fan wants to view.
Well, it goes back to the number one goal we have is to service the viewer. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to remember that people, in this day and age have so many different options, not just on TV, on digital, on phones, computers. When was the last time you sat and just you weren't distracted? So yeah. if you're not servicing a fan, they're going to change the channel on you immediately. And then it compounds that is you got to remember that people are inviting you into their home. They're choosing to say, we would like you to be on our TV in our house. And that's why you always have people that meet them. Hey, I know you because you've been in my house all the time. Well, yeah. We don't know me, but you know, you've been on the TV the whole time. So it ultimately goes back to what can we do? How can we best service the viewer? How can we service the fan? So as a group, we, after every single show, fixture weekend, review the shows. And then on Wednesday and Thursdays, we do full breakdowns and reviews, and it's a brainstorming session. What worked? What didn't work? Sometimes there's, hey, that didn't work, but the next time we're in the scenario, this is how we're going to handle it. This is the first time we've dealt with this. And over the last 5.5 years, the show has constantly evolved and grown and changed and modified. They always tease me, the only show that I have not reviewed or critiqued was our very first one, because it's going to make me cringe to see where what we did first to where we are now and what we could have done and all this other stuff. So
Pierre, it'd be like us going and listening to the first episode of Always Cheating.
No one should
do that.
I hope we burn that.
But to get to your point, as we're in the studio and as we're trying to figure out what works, at the core of it, you have four announce team and a production team and a company behind it that are football, soccer fans, that are pure sports fans, and they love the game. And they're just giddy about it. And if you say to our group, you're going to get up every single weekend at 3 a.m. and be in the studio by 4, and you're going to work a 12-hour day, and you have to do it again on a Sunday, they would do it in a heartbeat because they love it. Mm-hmm. And so as they sit there and as we sit there as a group, we'll constantly say, hey, wow, this multi-screen, everybody loves it. We should probably do that on TV. Yeah. Hey, you know, we're looking at these people warming up. Instead of talking about us and sitting in the studio, why don't we talk over those pictures?
Yeah.
And you're constantly trying to figure out what works. And when we do the presentation a little bit longer, we have our principles, our Bible of what we're trying to do, and you don't want to lose sight of that. Okay. But as you constantly do the shows, you have to be thinking about what works, what doesn't, and evolving the show based on what resources you get. Maybe it's footage. Sometimes you don't get the footage. It could be also about what the audience is looking for, what the storylines are. We really believe that we don't know when people are going to be sampling our broadcast, so we have to make every single moment count and every single moment have impact, because the one time that you as a fan who maybe not a Premier League fan tune in, samples it, we want to make sure you enjoy that experience and want to sample a little bit more and ultimately benefit growing the game.
Can we talk about Chirons quickly?
Yes.
Everyone loves Chirons talk.
Well, just I mentioned earlier we had our UK trip in the fall, and it was interesting to see, and you were talking about, you know, the US audience getting more sophisticated, and there were some things on there like distance covered, you know, for players.
Well, I'll stress, the US audience was always very sophisticated.
Sure.
I want to, because that's the one thing that I think was a big dispel that immediately. From the start, there was always a very knowledgeable and intelligent football fan base. It was a matter of making sure that we became more inclusive and welcome in the broader audience.
Right.
And that was a big focus. England, they only know, because that's not true.
Right.
Only in England they know what the difference between a beautifully weighted pass is. No.
Right.
There are a lot of people who know the game much better than them. It's just a matter of making sure we open it to a broader audience and make sure we were more inclusive in that club.
Fair point. Okay. But just as the coverage changes, are you thinking about adding, you know, like stuff like XG, you know, like are these things that may sort of popping up on
we're always looking at different ways to enhance, improve, to innovate. I mean, we're, you know, whatever catchphrase you want to say, we're always looking for different ways to do it. I think, and the data is always available. I go back to impact. Mm-hmm. You know, as long as we can enhance the experience, as long as there is a concrete way that it can inform the viewer, here is a stat that is actually has meaning. And if I say somebody ran 10 miles, was that good? Is that bad? I don't know. And so the worry you have with data is it becomes, you know, you make sure you need to put it in the proper perspective. Right. So with everything, we have no issues with evolving and doing things different. But, you know, when every time we do a telestration, we have to, and the big, you go back to it, everything must have a purpose and a reason. So if we're going to draw an arrow or a line or a circle, there's got to be a real service and reason for that, because ultimately we're trying to help people appreciate something. Yeah. You put a bunch of stuff on there. That looks cool. I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
Then you're not helping people.
That's so true. There isn't a lot of John Madden-style telestrator stuff,
yeah,
is there?
Yeah. No. Well, and you know, I actually got to work with John for 3 years on Sunday Night Football.
Cool.
And you will never – and that this goes back to almost everybody I work with. But John was definitely the pioneer. He made it look so comfortable and casual on the air. Nobody worked harder. Yeah. He studied, he prepared, he pushed, he reviewed. You made sure that you came 100% prepared for John as a member of his team. And you may not even work directly with him, but you had to be on your A game because he held a standard that was the highest. And so as much as he was lovable and goofy in every circle he did, there was a lot of thought and prep done that. So going back to the original point, with numbers, with stats, with arrows and circles, everything else, you just got to make sure that there's a reason, a purpose for doing it. Yeah. And that way it has impact for the viewer and it makes a difference. And that way, sometimes what I try and do with our group is make sure if you can make a point with one clip, you don't need three video clips examples.
Right,
if you can make a point with one circle versus three circles, then just do one, because ultimately the job is to explain things. Lee Dixon always talks about he looks at somebody, and he had a friend who didn't know the sport very well, and he would try and explain something to him, and he would keep explaining until he saw and looked at him and saw that light bulb go off. He goes, okay, got it.
Yeah.
So I explained it to him. So ultimately, as what we're doing is we're trying to make sure the light bulbs go off in anybody that's being done. And just to clarify something else is that I know that sometimes football, soccer fans, you know, there's a way to explain things without insulting them. Just like people who know the NFL really well, they're still breaking down analysis. They're still talking about formations. They're still talking about zone reads, et cetera, explaining the details of a zone read. That doesn't mean you can't explain the difference between, you know, overlap and run.
Right.
There's just a way of explaining it that doesn't make people – you don't have to talk down to people. You just have to be inclusive. You have to be welcoming. And so ultimately going back to all that information – the wow factor is awesome, but if you're not making the light bulb go off, then you have to balance that technology.
That makes sense. I'm not actually sure what the distance covered metric didn't really mean anything to me when I saw it. I was like, oh, that's sort of different.
I think Josh and I can really appreciate that perspective, though, Pierre, in that we've been doing this fantasy podcast for 4 seasons, and we have listeners who've been playing the fantasy game for more than a decade, and we can find ourselves falling into this pattern of using very language that can be obtuse to a new listener, even though they're a hardcore football fan. Maybe they're not familiar with these terms like template team, differential pick, double game week, blank game week.
Yeah.
So we ourselves have to be careful to not fall into this obtuse language where if we have a new listener, we're going to immediately alienate them. Like Kyle Martino, we're going to alienate him because he doesn't know what a template
is. Yeah, exactly.
it's no different than when we started the Premier League. You kind of get yourself caught. So I'll tell you a funny story, and I'll tell you our philosophy on that. So funny story was one of the first meetings I had with Rebecca Lowe was, okay, we speak the same language, but we don't speak the same language. You know, I speak the Queen's English, you speak American English. Okay, let's get down. And we basically had a piece of paper, drew down a line. It was the Rosetta Stone. When I say this TV term, what does this mean? This is mean. Okay, great. Which term are we going to use? Then it would be like, hey, when I say this TV term, what TV term does it miss? So we basically went down and was like, no, we're going to use the American term for this. We're going to use the English term for this. We're going to use the American term for this. So we basically came up with our own, I don't want to say pig Latin, for TV terms. So now during the control room, and now we're 5.5 years later, there are people that I work with on a regular basis who been in TV all their lives and everything else, who go, I have no idea what you just said. No idea what you said. Because it's a hybrid of, you know, InVision, ULAY, on camera, VT, you know, what all these different terms. So, you know, it's funny. But with regards to your, you know, template and all the other terms, and we had to this discussion. It was one of the most important discussions we had as a group was, okay, do we use English soccer football terms or American soccer terms? And we said, we're going to use both. So Kyle may say upper 90 and Rebecca say top corner. You know, Kyle may say jersey, Rebecca may say kit. You know, we can go through all the different things. But what we said, well, how do we make people understand? And it's just repeating yourselves.
Yeah.
It's not saying kit, for those of you that don't know what a kit is, that's a jersey for you Americans. You know, you don't want to make people stupid. You just repeat, hey, his kit got torn, his jersey got torn. just by repeating it instantly, everybody knows what it said, and you're not insulting people.
Yeah. Interesting.
And that went for laws of the game, and that also went for English phrases. Yeah. So Arlo will say to me, he'll say, hey, he's clearly under the cosh. He's under a lot of pressure. By just repeating himself, you know exactly what he meant, and now you've learned a new term.
That's interesting.
And you're not making people, for those of you that don't know what that means. You know, so there's a way of doing that. And ultimately, it's led to educating people. And don't get me wrong, I got a couple times where Arlo will hit me on top of it. Do you have any idea what I said? And he'll be like, he looks like he's running in Marmite. I'm like, I have no idea what you just said. Let me explain what that means. But ultimately,
there's an authenticity to it.
Well,
though, right?
You're just because we've just sat here and we both watch a sport and we've thrown out the different football terms, both English and American.
Yeah.
And they can, you don't have to be one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's an international global term, a global sport.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of making sure people feel, you know, included and helping people. So going back to some of the terms you use, just repeat yourself.
Yeah.
And ultimately, they're gonna understand. And the people that know what you mean don't think twice about it. The people that don't know what you mean understand what you meant. And it's a way of educating people in a positive way.
Some of the masters of this are part of the NBC's team. The Men in Blazers have made a career out of creating a dictionary.
It's true. They also make up their own words.
Yeah,
There's a lot of times where I have no idea where they're going.
The word shass still pops in my head all the time,
But I think that's something that goes hand in hand. What Men in Blazers is doing and what NBC's coverage does writ large is there's a level of inclusiveness and there's a level of come be a part of this club, this really cool, fun thing.
I was thinking about
that
with Rebecca Lowe too, because we went to the very first Men in Blazers New York City meetup. This is six, 7 years ago now, I think. And Rebecca Lowe, I think, was the first guest there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I've like been following. It's like when she got pregnant, I was like, oh, that's great. You know, I was like sort of this person I never met, saw her on stage once,
That goes back to you're welcoming
intimacy.
People into your home.
Yeah.
You almost feel like you know them. And that's what's great about the on-air announce team is that they are family and they love the sport. It's infectious. But I'd also make a point that the best compliment I get from anybody is I want to be friends with your announce team.
Yeah.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
And it's you're right. They love what they're doing. They're having fun, and they become a family that's always on the TV in your house in the morning. So you follow along their careers because you feel like you know them.
Do you think the morning aspect is? I know you do the Premier League mornings as like kind of a.
I'll talk a bunch about it in a little bit, but it's absolutely that the original marketing plan was creating awareness. It was about making sure people were aware of the Premier League and embracing the British invasion, for lack of a better term. And after a couple of years, we realized that there was a huge fan base in here that was experiencing the Premier League, but they weren't experiencing the pubs and the chanting and everything else. They were experiencing it in their PJs at home.
Yeah.
And our announcers and all the people working at NBC get compliments all the time, and the compliment is, thank you. Thank you for making my family spend breakfast and mornings together.
Yeah.
You know, and it starts off with a conversation that you guys will have, hey, I never really liked soccer. And you're like, okay, I know where this is going.
Right.
But my kids love it.
Right.
And every morning they watch it.
Yeah.
So I want to spend time with them, so I watch it. And you know what? It's actually pretty good. Tell me about this and this. And and that's a conversation you hear all the time.
Oh, yep.
And it's great. And so hey, tell me about this. What about this? Et cetera, et cetera. So the morning aspect, as much as it's the marketing campaign, it's about celebrating and embracing the American Premier League experience.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of research that was done into it and everything else, but the time difference doesn't lend itself. And there's a benefit to it as well. Now, so yes, the time difference doesn't lend itself to communal viewing and pubs and everything else, but it does lend itself to PJs, breakfast, sitting on your couch. And also, there's no direct American sports competition at those times.
Yeah, right.
So ultimately, you look in the mornings, you got the cartoons, you got news. Let's put on a little footy. And that allowed people to really have that communal experience. And this may sound, and I truly believe that our group, we all believe that we're almost on a mission, missionaries, for lack of a better term, ambassadors, whatever word you want to use. Right now is such a special time in the sport and such a special time in soccer. But I don't believe you're going to truly appreciate the impact that's being done right now until a generation from now. Mm. And what I mean by that is those little kids that are watching soccer with their dads are now going to be college-age kids doing it with their college buddies.
Yeah.
And the college-age kids are going to be the ones doing it with their kids. Mm. And you're going to grow the sport that way. It's a generational thing where I can tell you right now some of the things that I truly love doing with my dad. And they're things that at the time you didn't think much of it, but it was just like, you know what? I remember doing that with my dad. I remember those things. I remember those. That's what these kids are going to – they may not realize right now that they're spending time with their little kids.
Yeah.
Just like your little one says, joking around. But, those are going to be the memories they're going to have of, hey, I got to do this with my dad. And how many things – I have a little one, so I can't wait to play catch with my son for the first time.
Yeah.
Now, he may not love sports, and that's not the end of the world. But, that's the one thing I get to do with my dad that I really want to do. Yeah. And, I can't wait to do that with my kid. So imagine the little kids when they start growing up saying, I can't wait to do hey, spend the weekends watching a Premier League team play and enjoying that experience. So it's really a special time. It's a lot of fun to be a part of, and as a group, we truly believe it's a responsibility we have of what we're trying to do right now. And from the on-air team to the entire marketing team to the entire company, they're 100% behind this passion.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about the generational thing. I mean, when you talked about your son, I was thinking about my dad. Like early 90s, Boston College beat Notre Dame in some huge football game.
1993.
That's right. Yeah, and I remember my dad jumping up and down on the couch. He was so excited. And I was a sports fan for life from there.
Your dad's Tom Cruise, though.
My dad is Tom Cruise, yeah. He's very short, yeah.
I think we can finish with two questions kind of looking ahead. But before we do that, you're talking about the morning experience. First, the indelible image from your marketing campaign recently was the pouring of the glass of OJ versus the pouring of the pint glass. Both of those ring true for me. Listeners of Always Cheating know that Josh and I, we're more on the pint glass side of things.
For the evenings.
There's a whole industry of bars across the country
Happy hour somewhere in the world. Exactly. Just don't forget that. Happy hour somewhere
in
the world.
Even in Australia, right?
Definitely happy hour at the Black Horse. But it's great that there's very little competition for live viewing at that time here in the States early in the morning. And it seems like NBC is looking for ways to engage people with that live experience. You guys recently launched the Score Predictor game, which is fun, and also from us, from the FPL hardcore fantasy perspective, the price prediction game is much more, I guess you could say, low impact. Mm-hmm. You don't have to set a team every week.
It's the gateway drug into fantasy. Yeah.
So in terms of trying to engage people live or looking ahead to next season with launching other games or viewing experiences, what do you guys have planned for next season?
Well, candidly, we're still trying to get through this season.
Yeah.
I think that... To answer your question in short, there are a lot of ideas, but nothing that's ready to kind of be discussed. We're always open to different ways to evolve. It could be the Snapchat show. It could be the free-to-play game or the Predictor app. It's a matter of just figuring out different ways that we can help people appreciate the Premier League and engage with the Premier League. The free-to-play game was also a game they play over in England. I mean... Candidly, and I probably shouldn't be saying this, the UK team play it all the time amongst themselves. And
interesting.
Yeah. There's a group and they take it so seriously. You're telling me that Lee Dixon, Graham Lasso are not competitive? I mean, come on, seriously. So it's something that's been played and it's done quite often. And it's an opportunity for you to say, hey, I may not be 100% interested in this game, but it'd be interesting to see because I predicted a 2-1 scoreline. So it gives you – and going back to that, there are no home teams in the U.S., if you're in the UK, if you're born in the UK, birthright, several tiers of football, you're born into your thing.
Yep.
Here, there's no home teams. There's candidly no connection. It's a geographical divide. It's not like you grew up in Connecticut, so all of a sudden you're going to be a Yankees or a Red Sox fan. I mean, there's no reason. So you got to find a way to build that connection and give people a way to ultimately appreciate the sport. And once you get that connection, once you build that connection, ultimately you're going to be hooked for life. The sport itself, the competition itself, is phenomenal. It's not like we're selling something that's not high quality.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of just giving people reason to kind of, hey, you know what? Let me dabble in the free to play. I can win $50,000. Mm-hmm. Hey, you know what?
Yeah.
I actually really enjoy this. Hey, my kid's watching. I'm going to say, yeah, you know what? I might actually, this is really good.
Yeah.
So it's just different ways and different people find different ways to engage it. So ultimately, whether it's the free to play game, whether it's Snapchat, whether it's the streaming, whether it's the Micro Mosaic, our job is to provide the best experience for our audience on any platform and make sure that they truly enjoy it. And, you know, it's a growing, you know, what's the cliche? A rising tide lifts all boats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's the most important thing. It goes back to the number one goal, grow the game of football, grow the game of soccer in the United States. And that's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Well, I think about the personality thing. I mean, you know, it's kind of like the NBA right now, where the NBA, it's the games matter, but they're kind of the games are just part of the fun that allows you to follow Anthony Davis and what's going on there. And I feel like you're seeing that more and more in the Premier League too, you know, sort of, you know, what's going on with Mo Salah.
Pogba,
of course, you know, the Mourinho, obviously.
You
know,
I think the one thing that I think that when I go to people, like, explain to me, so there's no playoffs and everything else. Well, if you look at any other major sport in the U.S., they don't play each other the same equal amount of times, and oftentimes don't play the same opponents.
Yeah.
You know, in the Premier League, you play everybody twice, home and away.
Yeah.
So at the end of the season, it's fair.
You know.
And also, you can say, well, playoffs, what's the regular season? What meaning does it have? In the Premier League, hey, listen, Liverpool dropped points to two straight weeks, and all of a sudden they're not top of the table.
Yeah.
So it's goals. Hey, there's all that slow scoring. Well, don't you have seen something special?
Yeah.
When you get that one goal in that 1-0 game,
yeah,
it's like, wow, that's pretty special. Yep. I got frustrated with everybody saying the Super Bowl is boring. I love the Super Bowl. I thought it was great. I mean, if you love sports, I love a pitching duel. I love defense. I love, you know, back in that one touchdown was scored, pretty darn good. I mean, granted that the defense wore down. Gronk, I mean, over the shoulder. I mean, to me, you want to – if you're a sports fan, I don't say if you're a person, you want to see greatness. It doesn't matter. It could be in theater. It could be in movies. It could be music. You love greatness. You love seeing something special. You love seeing, and the Premier League every weekend gives you something crazy and special.
Yeah.
One of my first conversations when we were some of the Premier League team was Robbie Musto. I was talking to him and said, hey, listen, we got 40 hours of coverage a week. I don't know what we're going to fill the time with. I said, I'm really worried about this. He goes, stop. With the Premier League, there's always something to talk about.
Yep.
And I'm telling you right now, 5.5 years in, he was 100% right. There hasn't been one day where we said, all right, Monday, it's not the most exciting excitement. Oh, wait, somebody got fired. This happened. There's always something to talk about.
Yeah.
So it's truly the best entertainment you can have.
Yeah. Well, I know you've got to go. It was fantastic talking to you. I could do this for like another hour. But,
Indeed.
Thank you so much, Pierre, for coming.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
We're back. Josh, you were right. What an amazing interview, Pierre. A class act. Thank you for your time, Pierre. I hope all of you guys enjoyed listening to that little insight, a little behind the curtain on what it takes to produce live sporting events for the masses.
Agreed, Brandon. I really enjoyed meeting him, and now I enjoyed having a new hero. You know, that was the best part.
I need a hero.
So thank you for listening to the podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, get a bonus podcast each week, talk to us on the Slack, get an Always Cheating t-shirt, all kinds of cool stuff, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating to learn more. Brandon, do you want to thank our producers?
Yeah, big thanks to our producers, as always, Mike DiPietro, Stephen Toomey, Sam Streak, Jacob Roberts, Carl Rasmus, Leni Granley, Chris Howell, Rafi Khan, Martin Savage, Rick Brailsford, Jim Payne, Adam Benjamin, Max Chamberlain, Brian T., Trevor Ingerson, congratulations to baby Max, Trevor, Chris Carter, DeBig Gaffer, Danny Evans, Babas Kuhn, Tor Ferdland, Husby Carmichael Esquire, Ben Grant, James Holland, and Matt Ritter.
Thanks, guys.
And don't forget to subscribe to the Always Cheating Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, Acast, wherever it is that you get your podcasts. Go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. That really helps us. Costs you nothing, but say, it depends on how quick a typer you are. 15 seconds, 30 seconds, that's up to you. Also, follow us on social media. Where can people find us there, Josh?
You can find us on Twitter at Hail Cheaters, Instagram also Hail Cheaters, that's H-A-I-L Cheaters, Facebook.com/AlwaysCheating. You can also email us, HailCheaters@gmail.com, or if you've missed all of this, just visit our website, AlwaysCheating.com. There you can find links to each episode of the podcast, our Patreon page, learn more about us, and lots more.
And while we recorded this podcast, Paul Pogba has just scored for Manchester United in the 45th minute. So here we come, Chelsea Everton.
Wow. And okay, that makes the Pogba captaincy even more appealing, doesn't it? Man, he's been good. Okay.
Very much in form.
Man, I knew that was going to happen. All right. Fascinating.
Hail Pogba.
Hail Pogba. We'll be right back.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.